Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Now, here's something where most people's sensibilities run along the same lines. There's that kind of cringing moment, that sense that something isn't quite right here. You see a little girl in the mall walking with her mom, and the girl is dressed more provocatively than her mother. Now, neither really should be dressed provocatively, but we have sexualized our children, but especially our girls, and the age is getting younger and younger and younger. We're going to be talking about the sexualization of girls with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. It's a phenomenon that's even found its way onto YouTube. Before we talk with Dr. Morse about this, let's get the story from ABC's Good Morning America.
Is it the hot pants, bikini tops, and thigh-high stockings? Or the suggestive dance moves that has so many people outraged? Apparently, both.
Just kind of shocked.
It's okay for little girls to do Beyonce, but it's not okay for them to dress like that.
Without a doubt, these girls are exceptional dancers, but they're only 8 and 9 years old and wearing arguably even less than Beyonce in her Single Ladies video. Two of the girls' parents defended the costumes on Friday's GMA.
These kids are going to a dance competition and they're wearing dance clothes, you know, costumes.
But after their interview, more than 1,000 hit the message boards. Some agreeing with the parents, give these girls the credit they deserve, they can dance, but most expressing criticism. Seeing these 8-year-old girls showing their bodies in that inappropriate manner just sickens me, writes another. And if you're letting your 8-year-old dress this way now, how are you going to let her dress when she is 16? It seems to be a recurring controversy. Just last week, 17-year-old Miley Cyrus got into hot water over provocative moves in a new video that parents don't believe are fit for her tween fans. The show Toddlers and Tiaras follows pint-sized beauty queens in what many say is inappropriate attire.
So you want to play?
And the 11-year-old heroine of the recent flick Kick-Ass got flack for using a sexually charged expletive that few adults would dare utter. But the tiny dancers themselves are oblivious.
We try to put 120% in.
And thankfully, still innocent. For Good Morning America, Stephanie Tsai, ABC News, New York.
Joining us to talk about the sexualization of girls, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What's your gut reaction to this story?
You know what, Todd? When I saw those videos, it brought me back to when I was a dance mom myself and taking my daughter to dance. But my daughter did Irish dance. And Irish dance is a very different kind of genre. But every once in a while, the studio where we were would put on recitals, and we'd have all the different types of dance that were taught by other teachers in that school. And all of us Irish dance moms would look at each other and think, oh, my gosh, we are so glad our girls do Irish dance and they're fully clothed in every dance all the time, you know, because what you're seeing on that video is not that unusual. It's, you know, little girls learning bump and grind type of moves that, you know, are really not necessary for learning how to dance. So the parents coming on and saying, oh, give the girls a break, they're really talented dancers. Yeah, that's fine. Let's use the talent towards something constructive and wholesome rather than having 8-year-olds bumping and grinding. I mean, what could possibly be the point of that?
Well, I was a dance dad, I guess, if having a daughter in dance class makes you one of those. And, I mean, I had the same experience as you, although probably with ballet and tap and stuff like that. But what I thought about when I saw this video was this was not the first time the parents saw their girls dance in this ensemble.
That's right.
I mean, this required an enormous amount of practice and obviously And so the parents were aware of this. They had to buy the costumes, all of those kinds of things. Yep. And the teachers, wherever this was done, were also in on this. I mean, at some point, doesn't someone say, have we pushed it too far?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, in most dance schools, I suspect that what happens is that the parents, like us, just take their girls out and go do something else rather than put up with that, and rather than go fight it, you know, rather than go to the teacher and say, you know something, this is not appropriate. I'm not going to put up with this. So there's already a critical mass of dance teachers plus parents who are complicit in this thing, that it's very hard for an individual set of parents to fight against a school and have them stop doing this type of stuff. So if you're okay with your daughter doing that, you can find a place to do it. And that's what I really think is kind of sad, is that there are way too many parents who are complicit in this business.
The genie's out of the bottle, and I don't think we even can talk about putting it back in. But
we have to talk about putting it back in. I mean, the Ruth Institute is all about putting genies back in bottles, you know what I mean? Because if you look at the issues that we worry about, we're all over all these issues that look like they're lost causes, ships that have sunk, you know, that have sailed 30 years ago. But the fact is, if we don't talk about it, there will be no retracing our steps. So we absolutely have to talk about it and say, what is the point of an 8-year-old doing that particular type of dance? Those girls were very talented. They could be using their talent to do something that has not a hint of any sexual innuendo about it, you know. And so some adult somewhere thinks that's cute or is getting a buzz off of it, worse, you know, which would be even worse. And we need to call each other to account here and say, this is really not appropriate.
What struck me most about the story, as we heard it from ABC Good Morning America, is the very last little snippet with the girls themselves. And you realize, having watched the video, these are really little girls. These are just children.
Yeah, they're little tiny voices. My goodness, yeah.
I must be convinced, although, you know, kids are corrupt too, these little girls cannot possibly grasp the implications of what they're doing on that stage, what it looked like to adult minds and
That's
eyes.
Right. That's right. I certainly hope they don't. But the other thing that was interesting about the video itself is that they had a clip with a psychologist on there, which you didn't play in your little intro here. But he was very interesting because his position was right on. You know, I mean, his position is exactly yours and mine, that this is not appropriate. But he was kind of I thought he was just way too despairing about the whole thing, and basically saying you can't protect your kids from all these images. Well, that's not exactly true, because he was saying you can't keep kids away from all of the sexualized images that are coming at them through all of the media, all the different forms of media that kids have today. And so he was basically saying, sit with your kids, watch these things, talk with them about it, and so on and so forth. And that's all good as far as it goes, but I don't accept that you can't control the amount of images they get. It's true, you can't control it when you're driving down the street and there's a billboard, or you're walking through the mall and there's advertisements. You can't control that, but you can control the amount of screen time that kids have. And it's for sure that kids under 10, their parents should be monitoring the amount of time that they're spending on the combination of TV and computer and little handheld devices with video on it. You know, kids don't need that much screen time. It's much better for kids developmentally and emotionally and really every other way to have their noses away from the screen and out into the real world, you know, and interacting with real people. And I think I've made this point to you many times before. We don't have a TV in our house. We have a TV that we play movies on, but we control those movies, you know. We don't have network TV or cable TV coming into our home, and that's a lifestyle choice that we've made. And you know, if enough people made that choice, there would be a lot different kind of content showing up on the TVs, you know. So I don't think parents should despair. I think parents need to be as firm as they can for as long as they can about controlling that imagery. The other thing that's that we don't talk about that much. Is that young minds are literally being shaped in that brain development is still taking place at these early ages. I mean, they talk about kids, the adolescent brain still being shaped by external stimuli. And so that means that when little kids are getting sexual stimuli, it's doing something to their brain development. I don't think we fully understand how that's working. And so compared to the childhood that you and I had, where the most sexual thing we ever saw was, you know, Leave It to Beaver or something, we had the chance to develop some maturity before we actually viewed stuff that was explicitly sexual. And I think we have no idea what we're doing to young minds by exposing them to this kind of stuff. So I think you really have to take that into account, too, and parents are entitled to protect their kids from the content that goes in front of them.
Then with only about 15 seconds, I cannot help but think as a father, the first duty of any parent is to protect their children. And there are people in this world who not only sexualize young children, but who would, if allowed, allow or partake in victimizing young children like this. About 20 seconds to respond.
Well, I sure hope people like Richard Gardner are not watching these little videos, you know, but there does seem to be some correlation between guys who are sexual predators and their use of pornography. And, you know, what we saw there is, if not soft porn, it's very close to that. So this is not a good situation. And when you see this, Todd, you realize what the young people are up against when you send them off to college and they have to navigate all of that stuff on their own. That's what we at the Ruth Institute are trying to do, is to help the college students to navigate through the whole maze of sexualized images, over-sexualized behaviors that go on campus, because it really does take some fortitude to live out proper Christian values on campus, even when you've been brought up properly. It's a big job to go onto the campus in that kind of environment and face up to all that. And when you see it starting at the age of 8 and 9 like that, you can just imagine what the college kids are putting up with.
Folks, check out the website for Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute tonight, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Todd.
We'll be right back to talk about open same-sex marriages.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the 3 Concordia bookstores downtown in Kirkwood and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Ladies lead up tea party.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony list, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Kenneth Vogel recently published an article in Politico examining the makeup of the Tea Party movement. Initially dismissed by detractors as nothing more than angry white men, the movement and its leadership, his research shows, is mostly conservative and pro-life women. It is no surprise, therefore, that two of the most prominent individuals associated with the movement are Sarah Palin, who will be the keynote speaker at the Susan B. Anthony Celebration of Life breakfast this month, and Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.